Makhachev. He's a sambo champ, and sambo champs are just some of the nastiest fighters on the planet. The ways Miocic would win this fight are by being defensive, getting Ngannou to tire, probably wrestling a good bit. Ortiz is a really kind of pesky fighter. He's always there, always coming forward. He's got great cardio. Welcome in Lineup Logic to the MMA DFS pod. I'm your host, Mike Alexander, a.k.a. Roto Juan Kenobi. We're going to be talking UFC on FS1, Brunson Souza 2 coming up this Saturday. We'll talk a little contest selection, and then also we'll jump in here with a recap of UFC 220, what went right, what went wrong. So with the headliner there, Stipe Miocic defeating Francis Ngannou, really dominated him for five rounds via wrestling. I was kind of shocked at that. I thought Ngannou would have been better prepared, both by his camp and with technique. You know, the only way to beat him is going to be wrestling. He's not going to lose a lot of fights on the feet. So, you know, for me, I was very shocked. Obviously, I was big on Ngannou. From here, Stipe really doesn't have a big challenge. If Cain Velasquez gets healthy, you know, that's a good fight. But Velasquez is probably a year away from a title fight with his back. Ngannou, same deal. There's not a lot in the heavyweight division for him to fight. The one fight out there I would like to see is Ngannou and Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt's a dude who can take a ridiculous amount of punishment, so it would be good to see him get put in there with Hunt and really have to, you know, do more than just overwhelm a guy with power, because Hunt's been in there with the best strikers in the world over the last two decades. Jeez. Other highlights of that card, Cormier with an easy win. A couple surprises that we were on. Kyle Bochniak managed to pull out a decision by surprising everyone and utilizing some wrestling. That wasn't the standing and trading war we all thought it would be. Dustin Ortiz came up huge. It was a pay down that I was really pushing, so I was glad to see it. Got a razor-thin decision through a real gritty fight. The two guys on the early prelim card, Berzola and Makhachev, both came through big. They were strongly recommended cash plays. And then we did take a couple L's on that card, mainly two guys that I thought were going to be coming away with knockouts in their corner. Ended up getting knocked out themselves, Thomas Almeida. And Burgos, Shane Burgos. I can't predict them all. And we're going to move on here and try and get it right. 11 out of 11 on this one. So before we do that, let's talk just a little bit of contest selection. I feel like in a sport like MMA that some people maybe are not as familiar with, you might have a tendency to say, well, I'll just jump in and, you know, throw a $1 or $3 ticket in. You know, maybe I'll win something if I get lucky. And while that's fun, and I definitely do that myself, I also would urge you to read the article, listen to the pod, pay attention to the people we're saying for cash. You can get a distinct advantage in cash games by knowing not only which fighters have a good shot at winning or losing, but their style of fighting, whether they are a guy that can combine striking and wrestling. You know, that's really, for me, what I want to see out of people I put in a cash lineup. You know, a guy that's going to pile up takedowns, strikes, passes, and have a shot at finishing the fight. That's always good. But Ortiz was a great example last week. You know, he wasn't going to finish that fight. That's just not who he is as a fighter. But he was definitely going to have a great shot at going three rounds, maybe pulling out a decision. And he did. I think 93 fantasy points, something in that range, for $7,700 of salary. Really unlocked a lot at the top for you. So, you know, cash games, 50-50s, double ups, head-to-heads. Don't be afraid of head-to-heads in MMA. You know, it's for everything you can do, there's still a good amount of variance. So even if you feel like, you know, the people that have head-to-head matchups waiting out there might be more experienced and have a little more info than you, you definitely still have a shot to compete with them just on the variability of the fight game. But let's get to it and talk Sousa Brunson. You know, this is a rematch of a fight about 9 years ago now from Strikeforce days. Sousa really, you know, easily won that fight. He you know, timed Brunson perfectly coming in, landed a savage right hook, ended the fight basically right there. So, yeah, they're both 9 years older. I would like to think Brunson's, you know, learned a lesson or two between that fight and his subsequent fights. You know, he's fought some of the best the UFC has in that 185 division. Both of these guys have a fairly recent loss to Robert Whittaker, which is definitely nothing to be ashamed of. He's a champ for a reason. So, you know, Sousa's right there, number three contender in the division. Brunson's number eight, but could easily jump if things broke his way a little bit differently. Both of these guys, when they win a fight, put up over 100 points. If it's not over quickly, you know, I think you have a good shot at getting a decent amount on the losing end as well. You know, they're guys that'll do it all, wrestle, go for submissions, and definitely striking. But yeah, so that's a fight for sure that you want to think about stacking in a cash game lineup for me. And I like Sousa to win the fight just because, you know, he's a bad dude. He just looks angry at the world. Like, he's the kind of guy that you could see walking through the worst neighborhoods in Rio de Janeiro and, you know, not batting an eye because nobody's going to mess with a dude that looks like him. Let's move on here and talk some fighters that I'm on. So at the top of this card, you've got two guys who are wrestling-based, but definitely bring striking. Huge favorites, minus 600 favorites. Gregor Gillespie, Mirsad Bektik. Not fighting each other, they're fighting other opponents, but I mention them together because they're a fairly similar profile here. You can't really afford to use both of them, I don't think. They're 9,500, 9,400. For Gillespie and Bektik, respectively. You know, I think Gillespie has a slight edge as far as security goes. You know, he's coming off a win. Bektik is coming off his first loss. It was a loss by knockout, which was to Darren Elkins. But nothing to be ashamed of. Elkins was absolutely losing the fight. Managed to stand up and wing a kick out of nowhere, and then a follow with a punch that put Bektik out. So there's that concern that, you know, coming off of his first loss, it was a KO. You want to see what a guy comes back into the ring with. Sometimes that can have a psychological effect in their next fight. Maybe they're not as aggressive, you know, a little bit pot shy. But I don't think that's going to be the case with Bektik. You know, he's a machine. Really looks to grind people out with wrestling, hard strikes. Once he's got you on the ground, really hard to get up from. And then Gregor Gillespie, kind of the same thing. A little bit more of a whirlwind is how I described him in the article. He's full pressure constantly and pushes the pace. Both guys, I have a slight concern that they could wrestle themselves into a submission, a little more so with Gillespie, because he's a little bit more frantic. And his opponent, Jordan Rinaldi, is a submission wrestler. You know, he's a guy that if he gets your neck, you're going to really need to defend and make sure that you don't get tapped there. But that's only a slight concern with Gillespie. He's a really strong wrestler, should be able to use position and balance and neutralize any submission attempt from Rinaldi. Bektik's opponent, Godfredo Pepe, you know, he's kind of an awkward guy to fight, but I think Bektik probably walks through him. Pepe's a game fighter, though, so he might last more than just one round. You know, he might go two or three, possibly even a decision. So, you know, what I find myself asking is, who do I think's opponent can last longer in a fight with them? And like I just said, I think that's Pepe. Rinaldi, you know, can maybe survive a round if he gets Gillespie in trouble by threatening a submission. Outside of that, I don't really see him lasting more than a round or two. And the difference between a first and second round finish is 20 points, and a second and third round finish is 25 points. So I would look for that safety in the early finish. One more thing to take into consideration there is that Gillespie's on the main card, and Bektik's a little further down in the prelims, so that may have people looking at Gillespie's name first. He's $100 more. They may say, well, if I'm going to spend $9,400, I might as well spend $9,500. He's a better fighter then. So if you're thinking tournament, maybe transition to Bektik. Next guy on my list, Dennis Bermudez. He's lost two straight, needs a win, you know, to stay in that upper echelon of the division. His losses don't really bother me. He lost to the Korean Zombie and Darren Elkins. Darren Elkins is popping up as a loss for a lot of people lately, so not something I want to hold against anyone for a guy who is practically a zombie himself in Darren Elkins. And the Korean Zombie came back from his mandatory military service, didn't miss a beat, and his striking was crisp. Caught Bermudez with a perfect uppercut. Not a great fight for Bermudez, stat-wise or measurements-wise. He's at a distinct reach and height disadvantage, but he's always been at a disadvantage. He's a shorter guy. He's a wrestler, so that's where he neutralizes a lot of people's reach. You know, there's a little bit of a concern for me that Andre Fili, his opponent, could, you know, he's long and quick. He circles well. He's got good foot movement. You know, he may be able to neutralize the wrestling for a little bit while effectively striking. So Bermudez is going to have to offer something in the striking game, which he totally can do, and then, you know, dominate with wrestling. But I'm on him for the wrestling combined with striking and racking up points that way. Last guy that I'm on and just gets over the cut for me into the fighters I'm on section, Nico Price. He's 9K. That's my hesitation with him. It's 1,300 more than he was last time out, and that was a fight he lost. So it is kind of an odd situation. Obviously, DraftKings thinks he's the better fighter, likely to win. He's a minus 250 favorite, so a pretty decent favorite. His opponent, George Sullivan, is really just a striker. Doesn't have the strongest chin. Price can wrestle. He can strike. And that loss last time out came off of Price throwing a right leg kick and got answered, which this is textbook kickboxing. If somebody throws a right leg kick, you throw a right straight. And got put down by it. You know, plenty of kickboxing matches have ended via that exact combination. So, you know, I think he's still a safe enough play here to consider. I'm not sure you're going to be able to afford him with the other people in the 9K range up there, but because of that, he could be low-owned in tournaments. I do like the pace he brings. Has a shot to rack points up. So let's get into some fighters I'm off of. First one for me, Justine Kish. You know, she's finally fighting someone that's more her size. You know, she's kind of a bit of a bull in the ring. She comes forward, she looks to wrestle, one-dimensional striking. Has solid power because of it, but isn't particularly sharp or quick. She's a very big favorite, but I chalk that up to her opponent, Ji-Yoon Kim, really being an unknown. She's got one fight in the UFC. It's a loss. Only a handful of other fights before the UFC. Kim's opponent in her one UFC fight had really good movement, circled well, stuck and moved, and gave her fits for most of the first round. She finally started to measure her up and did land some quality striking. I think she's got fairly heavy hands, that being Kim. And if Kish comes forward the way she usually does, I really like Kim to piece her up on the feet. If she can stuff the takedowns of Kish, keep the fight standing, keep from getting pressed against the cage and smothered, you know, she throws hard punches and decent kicks too. So she's an upset I like, one of the very few upsets I like on this card. Next person I'm off, Joakim Silva. You know, he's a young guy. He's got the physique, the raw tools. What he really needs is just more fights. And this happens all the time in the UFC. They get a young prospect. You know, he's a Brazilian, fairly, you know, well-known down there. And he's not getting rushed along, I would say, but anybody you fight in the UFC, you know, even if they're a UFC tin can, like, that's a guy who could go compete somewhere else in another promotion and be a decent fighter. So, you know, the last time out, he really struggled, got out-wrestled, took some punishment, mostly because he comes in and is careless about it, looking to enforce his will on his opponent, but in the meantime, he's eating punches. And his opponent in this one, Ving Pichel, you know, he's an older guy, mid to late 30s. He ended his last fight, which was his first back off of a fairly long layoff, but he ended it with a KO when his opponent rushed in. You know, so that's kind of, you know, is it likely to happen twice in a row for him? Probably not, but that doesn't mean I'm not worried about it. But that said, Pitchell's stance is kind of, you know, it's very upright and rigid. He's a very tense fighter. He doesn't really let his hands flow. You know, Silva probably has the power and the ability to mix it up enough to get through him. You know, so I still think Silva gets the better of him, but he's just a guy that's a risk on a card where there's not many risks. So in cash, I'd stay off of him, maybe for a GPP. Last fighter that I'm really off of, Caitlin Chishganin. This is a real clash of styles, and Chishganin goes by the nickname of the blonde fighter. She's obviously a blonde, and I love that kind of self-deprecating humor. I'm just going to refer to her as the blonde fighter since it's much easier than pronouncing her name. But the blonde fighter in this one is getting a wrestler in Mara Romero Bello, more of a judo practitioner. From Italy, she's got really strong sweeps and throws. You know, that's the one in the blonde fighter's one loss. It was to a wrestler, but that was Liz Carmouche, who's one of the best in the division. You know, it's enough for me to hesitate if she struggles with the wrestling. I still think she does take the fight via superior striking, but it may not add up to very many points. So let's dig into some wild cards here. First one for me, Drew Dober. He's a guy that has, you know, he's perfectly fine eating some shots on his way in because he wings shots from you know, way back in his hip, and he's looking to put you to sleep with them. You know, he's got a stocky frame. He's usually at a height and reach disadvantage, and that's where I assume he developed this style. You know, his opponent, Frank Camacho, definitely willing to trade. I think that's not a good thing for him in this fight. Dober, definitely more power. I think it's probably an early KO for Dober. But, you know, you got two guys who are both aggressive, looking for knockouts. Anything can happen. Makes Dober a wild card for me. And at 8,900... tough to guarantee a win there. And if you get a loss at 8,900, it really sets you back. Next guy for me as a wild card, Bobby Green. He's been around a long time. You know, it's tough for a lot of people when they look at his most recent record. He's 0-3-1, and that one was really a loss that got saved because his opponent was deducted a point for kneeing a downed opponent. So he's really 0-4. But he's just a natural fighter. You know, he's a guy that is going to fight probably to his 40s. You know, reminds me of Bernard Hopkins. Just, you don't see him ever really hanging it up willingly. His body's going to quit on him finally. This is a career for him. So most guys that have gone 0-4 are probably panicking a little bit. I don't think that happens for Green. You know, he knows he's going to be fighting. There's always a fight out there for a guy as entertaining as him who can trade like him. If he loses this one, he goes to another promotion and, you know, maybe challenges for a title fairly soon. You know, he's in there with a guy who also needs a win fairly desperately, Eric Koch. You know, he's a KO specialist. He was in contention for the title at one point, but injuries really derailed his career. He didn't have much luck getting through a camp uninjured in his prime. So now he's kind of hanging on for his UFC life, which does make him dangerous. But I like Green to have a shot at a knockout here, or work his way to a decision. I think he will wrestle just enough to get you the points you need at 8,500 in a decision win. Another wild card for me, Randa Marcos. You know, she's alternated wins and losses. You know, she's dropped fights to people she should beat, but then she's gone out and recently beat one of the top women for me in the division, Carla Esparza, who's, you know, a great wrestler, not easy to work over on the feet either. And then her opponent, Juliana Lima, is pretty much the opposite. She's lost to the best three in the division, including Esparza, but she's beat everyone else she's fought in the UFC. So, you know, the question is, does the version of Marcos that shows up for this fight, you know, where does she reside? In that column with the best fighters in the division, or as a mediocre fighter in the division? She knows she needs a win. I think she's dynamic enough to give Lima trouble and has a good shot to pull out a decision here. And then last wild card, and one of the first fights of the night, Austin Arnett. Yeah, this is a matchup of two UFC newcomers on short notice, and they felt they needed one more fight on the card, so they added it recently. You know, Arnett was on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series in an absolute war with Brandon Davis. You know, he was game. He had a chin, took punishment, mixed it up with some wrestling, had some dynamic striking of his own at points. So, yeah, I was excited to see him get back into the cage, and you know, he's getting in it here with another newcomer who's not an easy test for sure in Corey Sandberg. I'm sorry, Sandhagen. But Sandhagen just fought in the LFA last Friday, a week ago. Like, that's a ridiculous turnaround for any fighter. It's a guy who's probably not got the best training available to him. You know, obviously, he probably trains hard, but, you know, he's not making the paycheck that some of these other guys are that can afford, you know, all the specialists they need to really train and be at their peak. My guess is he's just a dude who's willing to fight anybody, anywhere, anytime. So that's a little bit scary, but I don't think either guy is going to have a good shot at a finish in this one. So I'll take the fresher fighter in Arnett, you know, to weather any early storm and take over the fight as it goes. So that does it for the DFS picks I like. Straight picks for me, Souza over Brunson. Bermudez over Philly, Gillespie over Rinaldi, Dauber over Camacho, Green over Coke, Bektik over Pepe, Kuchgannon over Romero Barella, Marcos over Lima, Jeon Kim over Kish, Silva over Pichel, Price over Sullivan, and Arnett over Sanhagen. Really a one-sided card. You know, there's a lot of clear-cut favorites. The wrestlers, you know, are at a distinct advantage on this card, in my opinion. The women's fights are some of the more interesting ones, as far as I'm concerned, or at least. You know, there's a clash of styles in one. You've got a couple game fighters in Marcos and Lima. Kish Kim could be an entertaining fight. The only real fight that probably has fireworks is Dauber Camacho. I think those dudes just go stand in the middle of the ring and swing it, which is usually entertaining. And then, you know, the fight at the top, I think that's going to be a good one. I think there's going to be a finish one way or the other. Not as fast as last time around, but maybe end of second, early third. And I think Souza, you know, either by knockout or submission, and I'm leaning submission, you know, his nickname is Jacra for a reason. It means alligator. So, you know, he's strong, and if he catches your arm, you're in trouble. So that does it for this card. You know, any questions, hit me on Twitter at @roto_Juan, W-A-N. You can hit me in the Slack chat for you lineup logic guys. Always willing to chat some MMA. Make sure you at me. Same on there, at @RotoJuan. And then we'll have the usual lineup logic contest. So jump in, bounce some lineups off me, and get cashing, guys.